everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. It's time for Top Cow Thursday, and this week that means Cyber Force number one. So excited for this book. Been looking forward to it for a long time. Let me run down the creative team real quick. Cyber Force, created by Mark Silvestri. This particular issue is written by Matt Hawkins and Brian Hill, and the art is by Attilio Rojo. And letters are by Troy Pateri. I mentioned that too because I did notice what an incredible job Pateri did on lettering. I mean, he's one of the best in the business, but it really, like, it was so good that I actually noticed it, which maybe is not a good thing. I mean, you're supposed to, lettering's kind of like one of those thankless things, right? Like, if you do it well, you're unnoticed and nobody pays any attention and you get no credit. But when it's done poorly, it really pulls you out of the story, and that's when you get called out. So kind of a thankless job. Anyway, this is the start of a new Cyber Force story. I've had several people ask me, is it a relaunch? Is it a reboot? Is it a rebirth? What exactly is it? So what I love about what Matt Hawkins has done in kind of the Cyber Force corner of the Top Cow universe is the story he was telling in Aphrodite 9, and then that followed up by Ninth Generation. Through the natural course of the story, we saw something happen that basically changed the past. So it's not like it's some, you know, magical snap your fingers and it's a new reboot or it's a new universe. It's, you know, everything in the past that happened counts. It's just that something happened in those other series that I mentioned, and based on that, the past has changed, and now maybe we're going to have a new future and see. So everything ties in, everything's organic, and I really like that about the story. It's very similar in that way to what's going on in Witchblade right now. You know, we have a new bearer of the Witchblade, and it doesn't discount any of Sarah Pazzini's history or stories or any of that stuff. So it's a really good way to do it, and I think it really respects the fans, right? You don't ever feel like, well, wow, I was a Cyber Force fan from way back in '92 when Mark Silvestri launched it, and I was, you know, followed it all along through the years of Top Cow to the Cyber Force Rebirth storyline in 2012, and now all of a sudden none of that matters. No, that's not the case at all. In fact, it all counts and it all ties together. And what I really love about this iteration of Cyber Force is in the past, and especially in the 92 series, you really got kind of thrown into the deep end right away. A lot of action, a lot of characters, and it was kind of hard to gain traction a little bit. You know, very much a product of its time, and it was good for what it was. You know, the Silvestri art and him wanting to kind of put a stamp on it and make a splash, you know, early days of Image. So you kind of needed to do that in that marketplace. You know, the comic marketplace was a very different time then. What I love about this story, this version of Cyber Force, is there's so much more emotion in it. It evokes something rather than just like a popcorn kind of movie, you know, like a popcorn blockbuster, which, you know, they certainly have their place. I'm not bad mouthing them at all. It's sometimes it's nice to go see a movie and you don't have to think, and you could just sit there and eat popcorn and candy and drink some soda and just be entertained, right? It's like mind candy, so to speak. But I'm always one to say that I love comics that make me think, and, you know, I become engaged and I feel something. And if there's any complaint I have about previous versions of Cyber Force, is that wasn't what they were going for. It wasn't what it evoked. It was more of the popcorn spectacle blockbuster movie kind of feel, which again is entertaining. There's nothing wrong with that. But if I have to choose between one or the other, the one I'm going to remember and the one that's going to stick with me, it's the comic that makes me think. It's the comic that evokes some emotion, so to speak. And that's really what we have in this first issue of Cyber Force. It's much more of a slow burn. We're only introduced to the antagonist that we're going to see. And I believe Matt said the first 8 to 12 issues, I think, of this planned out 25 issue run. And we're also introduced to Stryker, and who I believe will be Velocity. And the rest of the characters we've yet to meet. And so this kind of slow burn, this kind of more subtle kind of storytelling, I think really suits the story that Matt Hawkins and Brian Hill are trying to tell. And it gives the story and the characters time to breathe. So I don't want to go too spoiler heavy. You know, I know the book just came out yesterday, March 28th. So I want to give you a chance to read it for yourself and tell me what you think about it. I will say that there are a few really cool lines in the book, lines that really stuck with me. I'm sure a lot of you may be familiar with the line, "I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." It was quoted by Robert Oppenheimer, who was one of the main scientists that worked on the Manhattan Project, which was the United States military's program to create nuclear weapons. And it's actually quoted from an ancient Hindu text, I believe, from the death god Shiva. So early on, we meet the antagonist of Cyberforce, and it struck me right away, the quote, what the antagonist says is, "Now I'm become life, the savior of worlds," and then proceeds to do some really bad stuff. So I really like that dichotomy, and it really shows that this isn't a black and white villain. That's why I keep calling them the antagonist, the person that kind of stirs the pot up. And Matt's mentioned that in a couple of interviews, that it's not, you know, as cut and dry. This person thinks that they're actually doing good by attacking the CDI, which is Cyber Data Industries plant. And it kind of leads into Stryker becoming who he is and needing to have the cybernetic implants. And there are some other very humanistic decisions and tragedies that go along with everything that happened there. So I know one of the themes that Brian and Matt are trying to explore is the theme of transhumanism. And that's really a theme that Cyberforce has always tried to explore in a way ahead of its time back in 92. The idea of, you know, how much technology can you graft onto a human and have them still be human? You know, at what point do they become more machine than man? And do they lose their humanity? Do they sacrifice their humanity? And again, it's not this huge original topic. It's been explored, you know, many times in comics. Most recently, with the John Semper run on the Cyborg character over at DC, Bill Mantlo really way ahead of his time exploring what it means to be human with ROM Space Knight, that classic series from back in the 80s. It's one of my favorite of all time. So again, it's not a new concept, but I love that in this day and age when technology has become so ubiquitous in our lives, that some really great writers that I respect and admire, and I love their storytelling for different reasons, but Matt Hawkins and Brian Hill attacking this, I know that they're going to explore it from all angles. They're going to give us, you know, multiple viewpoints, and they're going to make it interesting while they do so. And they're going to be respectful and make us think. So first issue was a lot of emotion. And I know as the story plays out, Brian and Matt are going to give us more thought-provoking ideas about what it means to be human, what it means to sacrifice some of that humanity for power, and if it's worth it, and you know, those kind of themes. So I think that, again, if you take this for what it is, which is a brand new Cyberforce series, there's no reason that you need to have, you know, vast knowledge of Aphrodite 9 or Ninth Generation. As I said, there are things that happened in those series that kind of set this up. But if you're not familiar with Top Cow, you're not familiar with Cyberforce and the previous iterations, there's no reason you can't pick this up and just read it and enjoy it as a great standalone issue and an interesting and exceptional series going forward. I want to make sure that we all understand that Matt Hawkins, Brian Hill, and everybody over there at Top Cow, they're not expecting you to do a deep dive if you have never read any of this stuff. I mean, certainly you can. Certainly that's available to you. You can go back and pick up the trades of those other series that I mentioned. And I think this Cyberforce story will be richer for that for you. But I want to stress, and I want to make it clear that you can just pick this up, and it gives you everything you need to know right within the story itself to kind of hit the ground running. So I don't worry about needing to go back and read a bunch of previous Top Cow material in order to be able to follow along with what's going on here. One quick thing about the art, Attilio Rojo, I feel like is the perfect artist for this series because he handles action so well, but at the same time, he has kind of a softer touch. And so that really becomes important when we get to the close-ups on facial expressions and the emotion that's in the story. Like I said, maybe the one thing that was missing in previous iterations of Cyberforce was emotion. So to have an artist who can capture the feel and the spirit of the first series with Mark Silvestri's art, which tends to be very kinetic, somebody that can handle that and also handle the softer emotional scenes, that's rare to see someone do that so well. So I think that he did an incredible job. And I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that he also handles the colors as well. And so I know when an artist like Mitch Gerrards, for example, does the rendering and the colors, it actually helps him be faster because he knows where he needs to put the pencil line based on where he's going to put his inking lines based on what color he's going to do. And it saves him time. So I'd be interested to know if that's the case for Attilio as well. But whether it is or not, he uses an exceptional use of color to really play up the emotions, using some softer colors at the quieter moments and reds and oranges more so in the action scenes. And so it really helps to set the mood. And I think not quite to the degree that lettering is overlooked. I think colors are overlooked as well as far as how much they bring to a story, with mood and intensity and such. So I just wanted to point that out. And then as far as what Brian Edward Hill brings to the story, Matt Hawkins has gone on record before as telling me, and probably anybody who'll listen, about how much better Brian is at dialogue than Matt is. Brian has a background in psychology, whereas Matt has a background in physics, so a much more hard science. So I love the fact that Matt is kind of bringing the big ideas, the story beats, and kind of the flow of the story. And Brian's bringing some of that too, but he's also bringing some dialogue that feels very real, because there is a relationship between Morgan Stryker and his daughter Karen, who turns out to be Velocity, and I think the dialogue rings very true. And I do have to say though, I don't think Matt is bad at dialogue at all. I think he kind of sells himself short, but he may just be kind of owning up to the fact that it takes him so much longer to get the good dialogue done, whereas maybe with Brian it's a little more natural and flows a little quicker. So, again, I know Brian is very interested in exploring the ideas of transhumanism and the idea of enhanced humans. And the fact of the matter is we've had enhanced humans walking around for decades. Between pacemakers and other implanted devices. I mean, there's even I think it was in an interview I saw that Brian did where he was talking about considering social media almost a cybernetic extension of your mind, and this kind of collective hive of thoughts. And so it's very interesting when you start thinking about it. I mean, we often have our phones in our hand. I know when I'm at a convention, my phone is in my hand like almost the entire time. It's an extension of me. So you can almost think of things like that as you know, a part of you, a cybernetic part of you. It's technology so closely integrated into our lives. And what's the price we're paying for that, right? I mean, I've got to have my phone there because I got to give all you guys all the news and keep you up to date with what exactly is going on. But am I losing the chance to have human connections by being so engaged with this technology that's in my hand? It's something to think about, you know. It's something to think about, especially because they oftentimes elicit physical responses in us, right? Like you get pleasure from receiving a text message from somebody that, you know, when you've been anticipating it. Maybe it's somebody you're dating or you know, you're waiting for good news from family member or whatever. And, you know, you receive that news through this technology and you have a literal physical reaction to technology. And so, you know, cell phones and smartphones are ubiquitous in our lives now, right? There's no unringing that bell. But again, what is the price that we're paying? And I understand that the story that Matt and Brian are telling is much more kind of in your face. You know, it's Morgan Stryker, you know, having a whole half of his face and, you know, arm and shoulder and eye replaced. So that's taking it much further than just giving the guy a cell phone. And his daughter Karen, you know, having her legs replaced by this technology. So obviously it's to a greater degree. It's kind of, you know, exaggerated for effect, but I mean, that's what fiction is supposed to do. Kind of take the ideas and the status quo that we're living currently and take it up to the next level to examine the human condition of those kind of situations. So I think that's exactly what Brian and Matt are trying to do. And I think that in this first issue, they do an incredible job. And it's not in your face. As I said, they really give the story time to breathe. And it really helps with the emotional beats and helps you empathize with these characters. And for past fans of Cyberforce, you're going to find this version of Morgan Stryker much more realistic in a way. He's not really the man's man that the previous version of Stryker was. He's much more introspective. But I think that what we're going to find as the story plays out, that when him and the things that he cares about, like his daughter, are threatened, that he's going to be just as much of a badass as ever. But I like this new version because, again, it's somebody that I can relate to. I can relate to him as a, you know, being a father. He's a father and he questions his humanity. Who is he now? Does he even own himself? The fact that he's been giving this technology, it's been grafted onto him. He can't even have it removed without him dying, basically. So is he even his own person? Is he a person? Is he a man? Does he even own himself anymore? Or is he just, you know, a puppet of a CDI? So that's something that to be explored as well. So there's a lot of good here in the first issue. I can't really find any fault with it other than to say I wish it was longer because I want more of the story immediately. But I think that this slow burn is going to make for a compelling story, and hopefully it'll translate into good sales. As I mentioned before, it's already planned out for 25 issues, the whole story, all the beats and everything. So I'm sure there's room for things to change organically as it goes on, and whether or not we get more Cyberforce after those 25, I guess sales are probably going to dictate that. Knowing Matt and Top Cow, you know, they're a smaller publisher, their margins are pretty thin. So if it does well, I'm sure that Matt and Brian Hill have more ideas of stories they can tell in this world. So we'll just have to wait and see. So that's going to do it for this episode of Top Cow Thursday. I want to thank you all for joining me. please go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure to check out all our other coverage on pop culture, TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of good stuff. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. We're always sure to let everyone know on all our social media whenever new episodes are coming out, and giveaways, conversations with creators, upcoming conventions, all that kind of good stuff. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.